Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of 1973 Podcast. I'm so happy to have with us Knuckles Nylund, Stanley Cup champ, podcast host, all around great guy, and hopefully at the end, I always say friend of the show. So, Knuckles, let's get right into it. Thank you for coming on and tell everybody, as a Massachusetts kid, how you got involved playing the greatest sport in the world, hockey, as a youth.
Well, I am a friend of the show. You don't have to wait to the end. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't a friend of the show. And how did I get going in hockey? You know, growing up in the years I grew up, I was born in 58, so 60s, Bobby Orr came to town, the Bruins. You know, I was a big I was a Patriots fan back in the day. Red Sox, Celtics, all of them. I loved all the sports, but hockey stuck out for me the way the Bruins played, and certainly Bobby was the catalyst behind that whole thing. And you know, when I was a kid, I just remember every young kid, we played ball hockey, and everything was about Bobby Orr, Bobby Orr, Bobby Orr. And certainly them winning the Stanley Cups they did in 70 and 72, going to the parade. Yeah, that's how I got the hockey bug, and I certainly love the way the Bruins played the game because it kind of fit my personality perfectly.
So, as a kid, was there ever dreams to play college hockey? How did you end up getting to, the point where you knew going to Northeastern was a thing?
Well, my dream wasn't to play college hockey. My dream was to play in the NHL. My dream was to play for the Bruins. And now the avenue to get there wasn't clear cut for me. I happen to think if I knew anything about junior hockey in Canada at the time, which I didn't, that, and I'm going to be frank about this, I probably would have been a first round pick. And I say that in that era because I would have been fighting all the time, right? American kid up here fighting all these Canadian kids, and I could play. So I'd have been scoring. I've been doing all that in junior. And it's funny, I've gone and watched junior games. I'm like, man, this would have been so suited for me growing up. But being an American kid and being ignorant to that, quite frankly, I had to take another avenue. It was high school. I played at CM. You know, I didn't make varsity till I was a junior. I went to prep school for a year in Lake Placid. And then I ended up getting a scholarship at Northeastern through one of my coaches who was a friend of Fernie Flamen's. And that coach I had was Judge Paul King. He used to be the Chief Justice at Dorchester District Court. And he was a really big influence on my life in a lot of ways, not just hockey. He helped me off the ice when I got in trouble with the law. On quite a few occasions, and he was the guy that was always there for me and directed me, along with, of course, with my dad and my mom. I mean, they were certainly the biggest influences on me. But as far as helping me in my hockey career and my life, yeah, it was the judge had a big part in that. And off to Northeastern I went. I was there for 2 years, and I got drafted by the Canadiens, which I was not happy about because I wanted to be a Bruin. And I'll never forget the night. I mean, I was happy to be drafted, but I'm like, the Canadian, you know, four Stanley, they're going for their fourth Stanley Cup in a row. Everybody's telling me, you don't have a shot. You don't have a snowball chance in hell to make that team, blah, blah, blah. And the only reason I got drafted again was because of Judge King. The judge was good friends with two Montreal former Canadiens, Hall of Famers, Dickie Moore and Doug Harvey. He was very good friends with both of them. And they went in to see the general manager at the time, Sam Pollock. And Dickie asked if the Canadiens, you know, would do him a favor and just draft this kid from Boston. And I was picked in the 17th round. I was picked 231 out of 230. Five. So You know, it definitely was a favor. You know, it was a favor. 17th round, thank you. So yeah, the judge had a big influence. So that's how I made my way to Montreal.
So when you got to the NHL, like that first, like initial training camp, did you know that you had to start dropping the gloves right off the rip, or was it like a welcome to the training camp moment? Like, was there hazing?
No, I didn't fight in training camp. No one fucked with me either. And I say that, you know, listen, like I always said, I wanted to be Bobby Orr, right? Now I know I was an okay hockey player, but I was intimidated when I got up there. The team, you know, four Stanley Cups in a row, going for number five my first year, and I was really, you know, I'm with all these guys that I really didn't like, because I didn't like the Canadians because they beat the Bruins all the time. And I got through camp okay. I felt like, you know, I didn't do much. You know, I tried to hit and get physical. I remember I hit Guy Lapointe once and Steve Shutt slashed me and I slashed him back. But there was never, I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm gonna fight somebody and I'm gonna get a job. But what that wasn't the case until I got sent to Nova Scotia in my first year in the American League. I got sent down after camp in Montreal. I had no contract. I had a 5-game tryout for $200 a game. And I didn't play my first game until the fifth game of the season, fourth game, I think it was, in, no, yeah, the fifth game in Maine. And Maine was Philly's farm team. And I ended up hitting a guy named Glenn Cochran. And he turned around and slashed me. Big kid. He's like 6'4". He's the reigning heavyweight. And he turned around and slashed me. I slashed him back and he dropped his gloves. Away he went. And I cut him open really bad under his eye. He was bleeding like a pig. We both got kicked out of the game. And the next day, the coach called me down the room. And, you know, I thought I was in trouble because I got kicked out of the game. That's how naive I was. And he said, "Listen, good job last night." I thought I was going to get sent down. I didn't know what was going to happen. And he said, "Listen, do you have a agent?" And I said, "No, I don't have an agent. Come on, I'm fucking 17th round pick. 17th round pick don't have agents." And he said, "Well, you better get one because the Canadians want to sign your contract." So I had one fight, my fifth game. I signed an NHL contract a week later. Crazy. It
So that initial contract, was it a two-way, or
was
were
a
you just,
two-way, which I didn't give a shit. It could have been a nine-way. I was better than $200 a game, right? And then from there, that traveled around the league like wildfire, that I beat Cochran. So every building I went into, every tough guy that was there, I was constantly getting challenged. Plus, I was a college kid, right? So everybody thinks college kids are pussies, right? Especially back then. Even my coach did, Bert Templeton at the time. He didn't like college kids at all. And Bert was, you know, he always had tough teams up in the Ontario League. He coached the Sudbury with the Wolves. He had Al Secor. He had like so many tough guys and just loved tough hockey. So, you know, that was an eye opener for him to have a college kid that could fight, and a lot of other people for that fact.
Knuckles, when you were in the minors before you got to the up with the big club, any notable guys that you fought that you ended up having to fight again and when they were in the NHL?
Gary Risling, Cochran, he was back up. And I was only there 49 games, you know, just a little over half the season. So, yeah, just a bunch of guys, you know, John Hillworth. There was, you know, Bam Bam Belanger, but they weren't in the NHL when I got there. Jill's Bad News Bilodeau. Frank never been beaten. I never fought Frank because he'd never been beaten, apparently. He was a tough bastard. Gary Risling, you know, but yeah, I fought like 49 games. I was fighting almost every night. It was crazy. I had 304 minutes in penalties in 49 games. Like every night I was fighting. I still had, I still would have had what, 21 games to go, and I probably would have ended up with over 500 minutes, like crazy. So I got called up and then never went back. Thank God.
So before we get into the NHL stuff, I'm gonna ask Tom and Ed to give a couple questions. Tom, question for Knuckles.
Did you have anyone that kind of took you under your their wing to try to teach you, like, before you get up there, like, try to teach you how to be a pro, to like look at the game differently?
Listen, I'll tell you, probably the biggest person that helped me in my early going before I got to Montreal when I was in Halifax, because I didn't know the lay of the land. I didn't get it. It was a kid named Tim Burke. He was assistant GM for years in San Jose with Doug Wilson. Timmy was the head scout, assistant GM with him. He's actually still there. He's a really good scout. He knows hockey players. He knows the history of the game, everything. Anyway, Timmy, because I was a Boston kid, he's from Melrose. And Timmy took me under his wing and said, listen, don't be first in line, any of these drills. Watch, be careful. All these Canadian kids think they're going to, because you're a college kid. He told me all this shit. And I earned some respect really pretty quick of my teammates, which helped. But Timmy, he helped me big time as far as the lay of the land and knowing things. And I got called up, and when I got called up, Timmy was quoted. He was quoted in the actually he said it in a book about the Nova Scotia Voyagers. He said, we knew when Chris got called up, he wasn't coming back. And he said he fought everybody in the American Hockey League until there were no more takers. But that's dramatic and it's cool, but there were plenty of takers. There still would have been a lot more takers. Even, everybody I fought, they would have fought me a second time. Those guys who do that job, you're not like, okay, he beat me up. I lost, so I'm not going to fight him again. That doesn't happen.
Ed, question for Knuckles.
Sure. Do you have any particular memory of when you were playing at Northeastern? And then I have a second part of the question. Was the water ever warm at Matthews Arena when you're taking a shower? Because I don't remember it ever being warm there.
Oh, Matthews, Northeastern. I guess I got ECAC Player of the Week.
That's pretty awesome, man. That's good stuff.
Yeah, like it was pretty cool. I did pretty good there. Yeah, I had good teammates. I had a lot of fun at college. College, man, it's fun. I wish I just applied myself more in school when I look back. Hindsight 2020. But that and I would have loved to get a shot at a bean pot, and I'm so happy. The year I left, they ended up winning for the first time in I don't know how many years, which was awesome. Really, I was so happy for those guys. Wayne Turner, Wayne's an awesome guy and scored the winning goal. Yeah, it was really cool. Good friend of mine, Jerry Dwyer, who Jerry played JV when I was there, and I was actually a good friend of his. We became friends and I hung around with him. You know how varsity kids don't hang around with JV kids? Well, I did. And Jerry and I are still friends today. And when I left, Jerry ended up on the team, and not just because I left, but it opened up a spot. And he worked his butt off and he got an opportunity to be on that team. So that was really nice to know. And it was a great feeling that he had that opportunity. So, yeah. What the hell was the other thing you said?
I was saying, was the water ever warm at Matthews
Oh
Arena?
yeah, it was fine. It was fun.
So you make it to the NHL, finally up to stay. You're never going back. Who was the first person you had to drop the gloves with when you got there?
Bob Kelly in Philadelphia in my second game. My first fight, I assisted on the winning goal that night by Pierre Mondeau. And then later, that was in Philly. Then later, I got my first goal. So I had my first goal, I had my first fight, first assist against Philadelphia.
Gordie Howe hat trick.
But separate game. It took me two games to do it. But I did it. So it was pretty cool. I did it against Philly. I didn't do it against the Mighty Ducks.
So Bob Kelly, the Hound, how did that go?
The hound got put back in the hound house.
So you that first year with the Canadians, thoughts on the guys that are now Hall of Famers that were there at the time?
Well, just, I'm around them all the time, and they're just a lot of awesome guys, classy guys. The history and tradition here is incredible. I played with two Hall of Famers my whole career, which certainly helped me to be able, become a better player. I was, like I said, I was an okay player. I used to follow Bob Gainey around the rink all the time, try and keep up with him, lengthen my stride. I was a short, choppy skater when I first got here. So skating every day and trying to emulate his stride somewhat helped me. Playing with Carbonneau and him together, they were so, one, they were both awesome penalty killers. So when I was in the box, they were bailing my ass out. And then when I was on the ice with them, we played against, Lindman said it, and I'm sure you ever have Lindman on, you ask him, who's the best checking line you ever? He said, I look, he said in an interview that he thought Gainey, Carbonneau, Nylund line was one of the best checking lines ever because we had everything. We could score. We were great defensively, and we could fight on my end. And Bob could hit. Bob was big, strong, could hit. Cabo was great in faceoffs. He could play offense. He's unbelievable on his own end of the rink. He scored 170 points his last year at junior. And when Jacques Lemaire got a hold of him, and me, for that fact, Lemaire, said, listen, and Lemaire kind of got to Cabo in a way that a lot of people think Jacques Lemaire is incredible. Here's a guy that was so responsible all over the rink. And I say that he had Steve Shutt scored 65, whatever, 70 goals. He had LaFleur on the other side. Now, those guys, who's giving them the puck? Shutt wasn't giving it to LaFleur, and LaFleur wasn't giving it to Shutt. Lemaire was dishing everything to the both of them. And then those two were always thinking offense. Lemaire was taking care of the defensive zone, and he fashioned Guy's game into that. And Guy was certainly, if you met him when he was young, you'd think even now, you'd think he's a cocky kid. He's not. But he's very confident in his ability. And he really, like I said, those two guys helped me to get my game to the point where, man, I can play with these guys. And they really helped me do that. They not just the fighting shit, the fighting, no, was a different. Tell me when you go, you better try and cover there. But probably we all, as far as coaches, well, Bob Berry at the beginning, he really taught me how to work hard and what it is to, a lot of skate and stuff. But he instilled Claude Ruelle helped. Skate and pass. a little bit more. I always had a puck on my stick in practice. Everybody did warm up with a puck, three strides to right, three to left, then you'd weave with another player passing, then three players passing, weaving. Always had a puck, and I used to go skating with the puck. You can't rest. You gotta be constantly keeping it with you. And he would say, "Listen, the reason we do this, okay, the reason we do this," he said to me once, "How long do you think you have the puck in a game on your stick?" I'm "Oh, like 2 minutes." He said, "What? Think about it for a minute." I said, "Oh, okay, about 10 seconds." He said, "Okay, when you get it on your stick, you better do something good with it. That's why you have the puck all that. I want you comfortable with the puck. I want you not be scared of the puck. Like, I don't want you to throw the puck away. Be comfortable with it." He did that with, so it, a lot of the average players became better with the puck. And then he did all sorts of drills with me, in front of the net. I'd have like 30 pucks, forehand up top, backhand up top. He said, "I want you doing this every day. You know why I want you doing it every day? Because this is where you're going to score your goals from. And when the goalie's down, you better get the puck up real quick over him." Boom. Every day I was doing it. Didn't take long. I was scoring goals like that. Then he would take me in a face-off circle and stand on the edge of the circle. And he would have a puck. And he said, "I'm going to put the puck somewhere. You react to it. If I put it on your backhand, take it to your forehand and give me back on your forehand. If I pass it on your forehand, take it to your backhand and give it to me. React to wherever the puck is." So I had to do crossovers. I had to come up to him. I had to go back wherever the puck went. So he's working on my foot movement. He took my game to another level. I ended up scoring 21 goals. Like, hello. Like, that guy, to me, was the smartest, is the smartest, the best coach I ever had in my life.
Knuckles, I'm going to bring up a name that a lot of people don't bring up on podcasts. John Kordick. Thoughts on John Kordick and how tough he actually was. He was a
I thought
little.
you were going to say Rick Middleton.
Oh, we'll get to that.
No,
Nifty.
that's all right. Everybody bleeds. Yeah, John Kordick. Sad. Sad that his life went that way, but Johnny was a tough kid. Fight anybody. I heard back in junior he really, like, John was an okay player. And back in that day, okay players could play in the NHL if you were tough, right? If you could fight. And from the conversations I had with John and people that were close to him, he never really wanted to be a fighter, but was told in junior by someone that if you ever want to make it to the NHL, that you got to add that to your game, you get a better shot. And John did, and he did it for a while, and then he got, listen, I've been there, suffered from addiction, and certainly after my career, not during my career, but Johnny, he had some issues off the ice that really impacted his ability to do his job on the ice. And, a sad ending to a kid who certainly had, he had a lot to live for, and he had a lot to go for. Had that, he reached his dream. He wanted to play in the NHL one day. He did. And, it's a shame that his life ended that way.
So, thoughts on the very first time that you get into the Garden in a Canadian's uniform?
I can't quite remember that, to be honest with you. I remember the first time I played Boston, Montreal. That was my first game against them, and I fought Jonathan and O'Reilly, and then O'Reilly, I knew, and it was a big night for me because other than my parents being there, the I didn't think, oh, I'm going to go fight these guys. I knew there's certainly a possibility. And I remember I hit, and I don't know if it was Bobby Miller or someone else on the boards. I hit him hard, and Jonathan came after me, and we fought. And then, and this is a big turning point, my fighting career and learning how to fight better on the ice. Doug Jarvis got thrown out of the face-off circle. And then so did the Boston sentiment right afterward. They both got thrown out. So Bob Gainey goes to go in, and I go, can I take it to Bob? And he said, yeah, go ahead. You know, I'm eager rookie. But who's taking on the other side? O'Reilly. And he knows who I am. He heard the business. He saw me fight Jonathan. He probably figures, we're at some point we're going, me and this kid. So I beat him on the face off and he chopped me and I chopped him back and we dropped the glove. And I just said, screw it. And I, boom, I threw a punch and he came back and hit me with two lefts. And the blood just poured out of my head. My eyes were all watered. I didn't go down, but fucking he hit me. And I remember I had my head on John D'Amico's arm and I kind of wiped, and he gave me shit for wiping blood in the shirt. Meanwhile, it was pouring out of my head. So I go to the box and I got the towel on and my pride is, on the shelf and I'm wounded. I'm embarrassed. And I remember sitting there and I was kind of like this, and I wiped, and O'Reilly, I looked at him, he looked at me, and he goes like this. He pointed at his left, like, you should have known. And I did know. But I said, screw it, I'm just gonna. And man, did he hit me. And from that point, I remember sitting in the box that night. I said, listen to myself, if I don't fight smarter, I won't last. Because in that fight game, you break your jaw, you break your nose, you lose some teeth, confidence gets shaken. One. Two, you lose a few fights. They look at you and say, oh, is this guy going to be effective for us that way? Yeah, he'll fight anybody. He gets beat up every time. That doesn't look good either. So, I sat there and I said, if I'm going to last, because I'm not, again, I'm. It's 200 pounds, 205 pounds, 203 pounds at the time. But, most of these guys are bigger than me, like longer arms. They fought more than me ever on the ice. I had to become a better technical fighter. And I did. I started fighting guys, Dave Brown, Ben Wilson, like big guys that I had to technically be smart about it. Fight the fight I wanted to fight, and to be effective, and not get my ass kicked every time. So that really helped me. I had good max VO2, so I was a really good second half fighter. When guys thought I was finished, I wasn't. I would never stop. And yeah, so that to me was a really big turning point that night when O'Reilly gave it to me. And I did eventually get him back.
Tom, question for Knuckles.
Yeah, being a kid from Boston, did the Montreal fans take to you right away, or did you have to win them over?
The fans loved it. I remember my first year that, and I had those fights, and Red Fisher, the Hall of Fame writer, who, I don't know how many Stanley Cups Red saw, but he wrote an article in the newspaper. The Canadians don't need a guy like Chris Nyland. And I read that in the next day in the paper and I said, shit, they're gonna get rid of me, blah blah blah. I was like, what's wrong with that? What I did, And anyway, me and Red became really good friends, the bastard. God rest his soul. But you did need a guy like that back then. And there's no question. Even today, you can use a guy like that. But I got sidetracked when I talked about Red. What was the question again?
Was there a point? How did the Montreal fans take to you, or
Oh,
did you have to
the
win them
fans, yeah,
over?
because I went to the meet. The fans, yeah, they were from the get-go. You know, come on, every city, a guy who does that job, the fans embrace. You know, let's face it, they do. You know, as much as they do a freaking goal scorer in some cases, you know. So, yeah, the fans have, they did, they have in the past, and they continue to embrace me. It's been, yeah, the fan base is incredible here. I still go on that building. It's like nuts when I go to a game. People are nuts here. This isn't a hockey town. It's a Habs town, bottom line.
Ed, question for Knuckles.
I guess what was the best memory from winning the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, you know, something I always wanted to do. You know, I remember my first year, five in a row, they're going for. Dryden retired my first year. Conway, boom. Lemieux left. So there's three big names that were gone. And the team was going through a transition. And I'm like, I might get a cup my first year. And I could have left school the year before and turned pro, and I didn't. So I missed that fourth in a row. I was drafted in 78. They won in 78, 79. I came in 79, 80. My father wouldn't let me leave school. He said, "You ain't quitting school, you're gonna get your degree." Little did he know, I wasn't even going to school. And you know, I thought I was gonna get that. And this is crazy, I always say that. I retired in 92 back here. I wanted to play one more year, but it wasn't in the cards. Demers didn't want me. He wanted Rob Ramage. I get it. No problem. So I retire. They win in 93. So it bookended my career. If I never got a cup, can you imagine? I'd be pulling my hair out of my head, you know? Like missing those two. I should have left school early. Why couldn't I play one more year? But 86. You know, we went through the transition. Serge became GM. He made some unbelievable moves. He drafted well. He got Richer, Lemieux, Patrick Roy, Sergio Bomesso, Brian Skrudland he brought in. Price, Chelly, we had all these rookies. Like, it was incredible. Steve Rooney from Canton. So we had this influx of young players, and then he made a trade, which I think was really the trade that did it. Keith Acton and Mark Napier for Bobby Smith, big center iceman. All right. Like, center ice is such an important position, and Bob Smitty came in there. You know, he's a great power play guy, could set up man, he could score goals. You know, he hung on to the puck a little too long for the liking of some of his teammates. But he was a big piece of why we won that cup. And, you know, the other trade was Rod Langway wanted out. He didn't want the taxes, and he hated that part of it here. And he ended up going to Washington. We got Ryan Walter and Rick Green. Rick Green, first overall pick, defenseman. Ryan Walter, tough as nails, could play the game. So, you know, could hit and take a hit and make a play. So, yeah, we had a really good team in 86, and winning the cup that year was phenomenal. It was awesome. My parents come up, and for my mom and dad to be in the parade on the family bus out, you know, it was one of them trolley buses. They had a wonderful day just to see my parents enjoy that. And my siblings were up here, and my family, my in-laws, and the Outlaws. Came, but yeah, so it was cool. The winning the cup was just awesome, and it, like I said, it was Montreal and Boston too. I mean, Boston's awesome. You win in Boston, it's incredible. Here, this is the only game in town, right? I don't care, Alouettes, I get it, no disrespect, but they have a parade, it's not the same as this parade. You know, and then they got the soccer team, but soccer, you know. You know, it really, like, there's a million people. Like, it was nuts. You know, it was nuts. And just the passion, how much, people just love it. They're like, they love hockey. They love the Canadian. You know, it's a great atmosphere.
Knuckles, tell us how the trip out of Montreal came about.
Well, yeah, I didn't see a lot of guys didn't have a whole lot of respect for Jean Perrin. We won the cup in spite of him, I think, that year. He was the coach, but Bob Gainey and Larry Robinson kind of kept everything together in a big way. I remember Serge, guys were kind of weren't happy. I remember Larry talking about it. They went up and talked to Serge about the coach, and he said, "Well, he's the coach. Live with it." And boom, we're not changing anything. And we're going through a tough time. And he went around the room in Hartford and started saying, "This guy isn't doing this." And then he came to me and, "When's the last time you had a fight, Chris Nyland?" And I'm, "Hey, fuck you. What do you know about fighting?" Probably never had a fucking fight in his life, right? So I showed him up, and we were off to Buffalo, and when we got to Buffalo morning skate, I was on a different line. Back to the hotel, I got called to go down to his room. I ended up getting traded. It's the worst day of my life in hockey. The worst. Never wanted to leave here. Never wanted to play for another team. Yeah, it was really difficult for me. I don't know how guys do it. Guys do it. And I had to, but I don't know how guys, like, I just never felt the same when I left. I gave my best for my teammates when I was in New York and when I was in Boston, but it was just so different for me. I'm loyal. I'm passionate and I'm loyal. And I'm emotional. It was really hard for me. Yeah, it almost broke me, but I didn't let it.
Was there anybody when you got traded and you got to the next stage with the new team that kind of made it a little easier on you with the transition?
Yeah, I didn't have a problem fitting in with guys. I never did, I fit in just fine. It was my inner struggle and my disappointment of getting traded. I was really, it hung with me for quite a while. It was so hard. Yeah, it was never the same. It was never quite the same. Like I said, I'm loyal, I'm passionate, and I was so and Serge and I have really good friends to this day. I love them. But I put him in a bad spot. He had to make a choice over me, the coach. And I had seen him that following summer because I do my golf tournament here for Children's Hospital at the time. And I came back to do my tournament. And he called me and asked me to come in. And I'm there, "Nah, I ain't coming to see you, prick. You traded me, blah, blah, blah." But I went to see him and come in, and his best friend died the day before. And he'll never admit it, but I really think that impacted him in a way where he took the emotion out of it. Because Serge loved me. I played with him, with teammates. He loved the way I played. He loved the things I did. And I think because of that, dealing with that other thing, he didn't, because Serge is one of his best qualities. He manages people really well. He's a good communicator. He's played the game. He understands what guys go through and guys want, and he's really good at that. And he ended up, I came in and sat down, and, "Man, what the, why did you?" Because they fired Perron 3 months later. He fired him 3 months later. I said, "Look," I said, "Sir, why the hell didn't you do it then and bring Pat Burns in? You know, Burnsy would have been perfect for me." He said, "I didn't think Pat was ready." I mean, but he was ready 3 months later. Don't bullshit me, And anyway, he said, "I'm not bullshit you." And I was sitting there, and the year before we got our Stanley Cup rings, and I gave my ring to my dad. And Serge said, "Listen, the reason why I had you in here today is I want to thank you for all you did for the organization. I love you. You're a good teammate, and you're a warrior for this team and this organization. And I know you gave your ring to your father, and he gave me another ring." Yeah, wow, is right. It was really cool. It
That's
was
really fascinating,
a
man.
really emotional moment for me because, as difficult as it was on me, it was difficult on him too. I made him make that choice. So, and I accept that. And I've always said it, if a coach ever tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, you go fight," I'm gonna tell you, "Hey, fuck you." Like, if a coach, to me, that's disrespectful. If a coach, if they don't know they have a player that knows when to do it, how to do it, then you're an idiot. You're an idiot. And I always said to myself, if a coach ever tells me to do that, there's going to be a problem. And in the end, what saved me is I stayed true to myself. And yeah, I always stay true to my teammates and do anything for them. But I also had to stay true to myself. And that was one situation where I would be unyielding. And I was unyielding, and it cost me. But that's the only thing that saved me in the end.
I got to ask you about your time with the Rangers. How'd you feel playing in New York on a big stage like that?
I feel like, honestly, I felt like I was on fucking MASH. My body started breaking down. I don't know, it was New York. I hurt my knee my third game there. I broke my arm twice. I had a hockey hernia. Like, I was a mess in there. I only played 688 games because I've missed so many games in New York, And then, yeah, it was just difficult that way. I was in and out of the lineup, and the times I played, I loved it, I enjoyed my time there, but it was just so difficult because of the injuries. And then it was off to Boston.
That coming home to Boston and being part of the arch rivals, but a local kid, the fans loved you when you got there.
No, it was awesome. I didn't know how I was going to be accepted. I remember the first night, getting introduced opening night, and I was nervous and everything. Ray said, "What the hell is wrong with you? Relax, relax. You'll be fine. Maybe you're gonna. I mean, I don't know how they're gonna react. You go from all the people yelling, Nylund sucks in unison to, oh, they're gonna clap for me now." And sure enough, they did. It was really kind of cool. My father didn't want me to come back. My dad told me, "Fuck, don't come back here. Stay in New York or go somewhere else, but don't come back here. Screw them." My father hated the fucking Bruins. But he was a huge Bruins fan before I got to Montreal, right? We were all pulling for the Bruins. But, I loved playing for Mike Milbury.
Was
I absolutely loved playing for Mike Milbury. I'd go through a wall for him. He was a guy that I enjoyed playing for. I know Mike gets a bad rap sometimes, but I can't imagine, some of the things and the teammates I had there, I believe today would say the same thing. Guys like playing for him. And then my second year there with Bonus was a little different, And, I was beat up too. I was getting long in that 34 years old. Doesn't get any easier. And I have my problems with Bonus. That was tough. They put me on the Bruins do the A B squad thing, and if you're on the B squad, you're headed to fucking Shibugamo. And I ended up having words with Bonus on the B squad, and then he wasn't playing me, and I had issues with him. And we went to that first game, that first road trip of the year, right? That long road trip. I didn't play any games on it. I was in the stands. The last game of the year, the road trip was Chicago. And I went in the warm up. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm gonna play. And they said, take your shit off. And I remember I was riding the bike after warm up, and he walked by me saying, you know, and Rick Bowen's a really nice guy. I get it. But at the time, Rick was an assistant coach, his first head coaching job. And I think Harry and Mike at the time were kind of telling him to do certain things, I think. So I don't think it was all his own philosophy. And I ended up, Lyndon Byers, God rest Lyndon's soul, and Alan Stewart were doing all the fighting on that road trip. So I'm like, man, it's not looking good for me. And we got back to Boston, and Alan Stewart packed his car up and retired from hockey. He was sick of fighting. Drove back to Saskatchewan, where he's from. And then Lyndon broke his ankle in practice. Got hit with a slap shot from Ray, broke his ankle. So after practice, Rick Bowness came in. I'm sitting there, comes up smiling. He hasn't said a fucking word to me. You ready to go tomorrow night? I said, Rick, go fuck yourself.
Nice.
Now, some people may think that isn't a nice thing to do, but like I said, I'm an emotional guy. And I felt disrespected. I felt shit on. You know, I'm not fucking Ray Bourque and I'm not Cam Neely, but I've been around the fucking game as long as they were. And I'm gonna get treated like this.
And a Stanley Cup.
I don't think so. And you know, that ended up getting me not to play. And then I remember Joe Fitzgerald wrote an article saying Mike Milbury got to get off his ass and settle this thing between Nylund and Bonus, which Mike did. We sat down together, talked. Mike said, you know, you can't tell your coach to go fuck himself, Chris. I said, well, I did, Mike. It's done. And yeah, I won't do it again. But, you know, I said I felt disrespected, and I said my piece and shook hands with Bonus. And then he played me the next night against New Jersey at home. I scored two goals. And he played me. Fuck, I must have played 20 minutes. I was fucking dying. I was like, hey, I wanted to play, but not this much. You know, he's like, you want to fucking play? So he was kind of twisting the screws on me. Yeah, I'm gonna play this kid till his fucking tongue falls out of his head. He did. But Rick Bowness, again, despite our differences, he's one of the nicest guys in the game of hockey. Always has been, always will be.
Tom, question for Knuckles.
Yeah, you have the unique perspective of being on both sides of the Boston-Montreal rivalry. What was that like being on either side?
I felt like a traitor. It felt fun. It felt weird. I hate it. When I played against Montreal the first time I was in New York, I was like, I didn't want to do it. It's like weird. Just, I found myself sitting on the bench. I belong over that bench. I really was, you know, sometimes you can't, shit goes in your head. I mean, something comes in your head. Oh, you know, try to put it out of your head, but I felt like I belong over there. I don't belong here. You know? So, yeah, the Boston Montreal thing, yeah, it was weird. It was different. You know, I remember we beat them in the playoffs. We had never lost to them. You know, when they lost the first time? The year I got traded.
Yep.
And I'm not saying because of me, but you know what? It's and I'll say it. 1989, they played Calgary. They lost the Stanley Cup final. They didn't have a guy like me out there who is unpredictable, fellas. It keeps
Agree.
everybody guessing. You just never know. And I'm not going to say they would have won it if I was there, but there was something missing. And that's something with me. I truly believe it. Now, still might have lost, and it could have been different, but it wasn't. So,
Ed, question for Knuckles.
Sure. As you went through your career, how did you kind of prepare in the off season as you went through your career?
I drank beer. I went to the beach with my kids. I rollerbladed a lot as I, that started coming in mid-80s. I remember being down in the Cape in the summer. I rollerblade, and then I work out in South Boston at the BAC. I used to go over there and train, ride the bike. I would never lift heavy weight. I always lightweight, a lot of reps, just keep tone. But I was always a little pudgy when I went to camp, I remember the year I got married. I went on my honeymoon. I had like fucking, I drank like 50 million banana smoothies. I was like fucking 215 pounds when I came to camp. I was like Fat Albert. And I got Claude Gruelle telling me, "Yankee boy, you are too heavy. You have to eat salad. I don't care. Eat salad 3 times a day, but don't eat anything else." That was my fucking dietary plan from a coach that was 5'5" and 260 pounds, who ate Kit Kats and drank Diet Coke, telling me how to eat.
Knuckles, how did you know when it was finally the time to hang him up for good? What was that come to Jesus moment?
Well, when I came back to Montreal here, we went on strike that year before the playoffs. And, I was thinking, okay, the season ends, and, I get a shot maybe playing next year. I said to myself, if it's not in Montreal, I'm not playing anywhere. I didn't want to start knocking on doors and go play in LA for a year or two. And I remember Bob Gainey telling me, as we were getting a little older in the game, he said, "Knuckles, if you can, as you get older in the game, if you can deal with reduced ice time, you'll be able to squeak out another year or two of good, pretty good money." And that sounded good, but it's like, okay, early in my career, I had to sit in the bench a lot. And you did in Montreal. Your ass was on the bench. You play shifts here and there. You had to wait your turn. They made you watch a little bit. And, the nights I sat out and shit. But once I became a regular, and I was, I had a role on the team, and I could have never, ever have done what I did as a fighter in this league, if I wasn't playing. There's no way I could have sat on the bench, went out and fought, and then sat on the bench the rest of the game, like Mickey the Dunce. And I'm not disparaging anybody who did that in their career. I'm not. I just couldn't have done it. God bless them for being able to, suck it up and do it. I couldn't have. And as the ice time, as I got older and the injuries, they really, my body was breaking down. You don't want to believe it in your head, but when you start questioning yourself, I should have made that play, or I should have done this, or, oh, I used to be able to do that, you're in trouble. And I was my last year in Boston for sure. And yeah, so that summer when I didn't re-sign with Montreal, I said, that's it, I'm packing it in.
So after hockey, you now have a podcast. So how did that all start? I want to know how you got started with the podcasting.
Well, I moved back here to Montreal. I got sober, clean and sober, back in 2010, 2011. And I had an opportunity in the radio here, TSN. I had a radio show here for 10 years. And they had the pandemic came, that plandemic, I mean, the plandemic. And I started doing my show from home because, Yeah, you couldn't go anywhere because everybody might die if you left the house and you have. Fuck you. Then we had to come back to the studio, and they said, to come in the studio, you have to be vaccinated. And I said, well, I'm not getting vaccinated. So they gave me a cutoff date, and that was it. I didn't get vaccinated. I wasn't getting vaccinated. I had COVID. I survived it. And I had natural immunity. And I never got COVID again. I was around Boston firefighter, a friend of mine, who was vaccinated. I don't know how many fucking times. He had COVID 4 times. The fourth time, I was with him all weekend. I never got COVID. I was with him the whole weekend, in the car with him, staying at his house, everywhere, out to dinner. Called me day after I left. Hey, you okay? And I'm fine. He said, well, you better get checked. He said, I got COVID again. Said, oh, really? Thank God for that vaccination. But so I got fired. After I got fired, it's my only salary, my only source of income. And I was trying to get back on my feet, right? After the shit I put myself through, no one else put me through it. And yeah, it was just, what am I gonna do? And I did that documentary, The Last Gladiators, saw it. And the guy who did that, Barry Reese out of Pittsburgh, suggested I do a podcast, and he helped me get it up and running. And away we went. And I did it up until the end of last season. And I'm not doing it anymore because just the juice is not worth the squeeze anymore. I love doing it. I have fun. I wasn't making enough money at it. A lot of the majority of the money is in gambling and pushing alcohol, and those two things, because of the life I live now, I won't take money from. And like I said, I just, yeah, so I don't want to do it anymore.
Well, we're absolutely glad to have you. As we start wrapping it up, I'm going to ask Tom and Ed to have one more question from each, and then we'll let you go.
Cool.
Tom, question for Knuckles.
Sure. What are your thoughts on how they seem to be phasing hockey, fighting out right now from the game?
I don't know if, they're doing it at the minor league levels, right? You're getting suspended. If one fight you're suspended, next fight you're 2 games, blah blah blah. Some Quebec League, you can't even do it. Can't fight in college. So they're trying to get it at that level. So when you come up here, where are the fighters going to come from? It's like, I don't know if they'll ever take it out of the game. I think the one, I think the players would have to vote on it for that to change. And two, when two guys get so frustrated with one another, going at each other all game, you get frustrated, and sometimes you just want to drop your gloves and handle it like men instead of cracking someone with a stick or, So I always think there's a place in there for it. Listen, I'm involved in a thing here, and they just did a thing on Crave here on three Canadians players, myself, Richey, and Lemieux. And my episode come out, and they showed some stuff on there. And we had to look a lot of film, what we're going to put in, what they were going to put in. And, I looked at the brawl against Philly in the warm-up, the crazy shit in Boston. And I look at it sometimes, I'm like, man, kids today, if they were ever in that, like if it was like that today, like they say we couldn't play today. Well, but honestly, some of those kids today, would they be on the phone with their mother between periods, say, come and pick me up. We're at the Boston Garden. Get me the goddamn mom. Take me home. I need a glass of warm milk. But yeah, listen, all the brawls and that shit, honestly, I hated those. But two guys squaring up, I see today, like, guys hit someone clean and it's like everybody wants to kill the guy who made the clean hit. I get it. The cheap shot, you want to do that, go ahead. But when a guy gets, I know there were times I got nailed, I got knocked on my ass. And my father always told me, just get up, take his number. I'm like, and my father told me that shit. You don't have to go fight someone right away. Just take the number and you got to be able to, you dish out enough shit, you better be able to take some. And I just think today that, there's some tough kids in the league. That kid in Columbus there, he's freaking tough as nails, that kid. And Delaurier, Jack Eye's a tough kid. That poor Rempe, man, I don't know what happened to him. He fought that kid.
Reeves.
Yeah, he fought Reeves there. And I don't know, all of a sudden he's out. I don't know how he got hurt, if it was in the fight or what, but that kid has taken some serious punches in his short career, you're big, okay, you're big, but you got to use it to your advantage. And whoever's been teaching him, teaching him the wrong shit.
You need to give him a call, Knuckles. Straighten him
Yeah,
out.
it's not my place. They call me, I'm always available, but man, I feel bad for that kid,
Ed,
he's a
question for
game.
Knuckles.
Hey, Knuckles, who is the favorite guy to either play with or to watch play when you were in the league? The guy that just had that wow factor, just, man, that dude's just bad. You're a bad dude.
Wow, that's a good question. Come on. Like, I hated watching guys on the other team. That was my fucking job.
Right.
Playing against Mario Lemieux and those players. Gretzky, when we played against those are tough. Stastny in Quebec, like checking line. Even Marcel Dion, Charlie Simmer, and Dave Taylor, like some offensive powerhouse lines. So seeing all those players, yeah, like Gretzky was like, it's crazy watching him. And, because they were out west, I mean, they wouldn't see him as much as play out here, but Nifty and company. Nifty was an awesome player. So slick, so sneaky, so good. Playing against Ray, watching him. A lot of respect for Ray Bourque, right? Really playing against him and all that. But right where I was here, Guy Lafleur, Larry Robinson, playing with those guys, playing with, Savard, Big Three, play with the Big Three, which was really cool. Guy Lapointe was still here when I got here. Big Larry and Big Serge. So play with a lot of great players, played, against a lot of great players. A guy who I loved as a teammate, certainly Chelly, and I loved all my teammates. Not many guys I didn't get along with. There's the odd asshole, but you get along. But very rarely in hockey do you get the asshole. Every locker rooms are pretty really good in hockey. But I loved Mats Näslund. I still do. Mats Näslund, he's a tough little bastard. He was fast. He used to have welts on his arm after the game. When we played, you could slash guys. Not today, you put your stick near anything and it's a penalty. I'm not saying you should be allowed to do that shit, but man, I remember slashing guys. Today, you end up in court, for Christ's sake, for some of the shit we did. But Mats, he had welts on his arms, that little bastard, and he'd keep going. He's just a great little guy. He was fun to watch too, and fun to play with, teammate. But plays again, great, some great play to Cam Neely. Come on, when Cam, power forward, he was awesome. Cam score goals, tough bastard, God bless him.
So my question before we wrap it up, I have two. One is if you could go through the whole lineage of the history of the NHL, if you had to fight one guy one last time, who do you go up against?
Probably Brownie or Semenko. Brownie.
Yeah,
I've tried Brownie a ton.
Dave Brown does not get enough credit as a tough guy.
Well, I don't know where he's not getting the credit. Probably in Boston. That's why fucking Boston. They, like, no one's tougher than anybody in Boston. Like, oh, fuck, no one ever beat any of our guys.
True,
You
that's true.
know? But Dave Brown was, are you fucking kidding me? Dave Brown was tough as nails. Big Jim McKenzie in Hartford. He was tough. You know, Stu Grimson. But, you know, really, Brownie, I fought Brownie a lot. I fought, he had no shirt on. I fought him for like 10 minutes. You know, no shirt on before the game there. That's not an easy thing to do, you know?
Yeah, and the famous scrum.
Yeah, scrum. You call that a fucking scrum? I call that a riot.
Well, they always used to shoot the puck in the net, right? And that was the
Yeah,
playoff.
again, yeah, Claude Lemieux,
Yep.
Shane Carson.
Yep. It was a tradition.
Yeah, for them. Fucking, who ends up fucking taking all the shit? Me. And other guys too, but anyway.
Well,
So.
anything that draws Ron Hextall back out on the ice, it's got to be pretty epic.
Well, they kept him in the room. They locked him in the fucking room because Keenan did. He did. He didn't want him out there. They didn't want to lose him.
Knuckles, before I let you go, I ask everybody that we've had on this last question, if you had to sum up your career in one word, what would it be?
Fabulous.
That
Yeah,
answer, it is
that's all I ever
fabulous.
wanted to do, and I got the opportunity to do it, you know, and it was fabulous.
Yeah,
A lot of
that
fun. A
to
lot of
totally agree. I mean, lots of great memories. Being a Nesson guy back in the day, Sports Channel America, or all that stuff before they were streaming and collecting
TV
hockey
38.
cards and all that stuff. It was fantastic. Just another guy from Massachusetts loving on you.
Freddie Cusick and Johnny Pinpoint.
Oh, love it. Love
Freddie
it.
Cusick and Johnny Pinpoint.
Yep. If you don't know what TV 38 was back in the UHF days, you don't know hockey.
Well, you know who was the best though down there? Bob Wilson
Oh,
on the
yeah.
radio. Bob Wilson was awesome hockey voice. When I was a kid on 38, it was Don Earl.
Wow. Don Earl.
Don't remember Don Earl?
No, I don't remember
And
Don
then
Earl.
I'll never forget as a kid, and I loved Sanderson for this. I read his book, I Gotta Be Me, as a kid. You know, get caught smoking cigarettes and drinking and school and all that shit. Like, he was nuts. I love Turk, but I remember I was watching Between Periods, and they had him on for an interview, and he's fucking got a cigarette going down. And Johnny Pearson's interviewing him, and at the end of the interview, they go, "Well, Derek, thanks for coming on tonight," Johnny says, "and you have a $100 gift certificate to Easton Coat Company of Watertown." So Johnny goes to pass it to him, and Derek t says, "Johnny, no, keep it." He said, "I think you could use it better than I could." Johnny had this old like fucking burlap bag fucking jacket on. He said, "I think you need it more than me," and he gave it back to him. I'm like, I love this guy.
He's got to be him, right?
Yeah, and he was, and still is. So,
So,
awesome
Knuckles,
stuff,
I want to say thanks for the from the boys,
guys.
official friend of the show and
Thanks for
breaking
having
news.
me here.
Yeah.
Before I usually, this is where I did my. I'll show you the room quick.
Awesome.
I got some stuff in here that my office where I did the podcast, but some of the memory. I never, all this shit was in my mother's
Wow.
attic, right? Look at that. That's my rookie jersey. Look how small the
Nice.
number is. Look how
Fantastic.
small it is, the number. Like, that's fuck. It looks like those numbers could fit on a fucking table hockey shirt. But
Awesome.
pretty, that was the penalty box one. That was Don Cherry when I went on his show.
Grapes.
That's Bobby Orr and me. My younger days there. me get ready to cave someone's head in, Bob McGill.
Yeah.
Northeastern, me and Terry up there.
Awesome.
Chelios always tried to get in the middle and stop all my fights. Like, he was, let me just see for a second quickly. Yeah. And this one, I love this one up in the corner. Oh, the cup. That's
Oh,
awesome.
That's awesome.
Look at that parade. Fucking crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, awesome.
Up in the corner there. See who that is?
Oh, Bob Kelly, right?
No, that's Gordie Howe.
Oh, Gordie Howe.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay, I can see it. Yep.
Look at his stick just going by my head. See it? Oh, that one's on my website, right? My wife handled that, but it's on my website. And people ask, they want that one. And I sign it. I sign it.
Nice.
I said, you know, to so-and-so, missed the hockey's lucky he fucking missed. But it just quickly, that my all-star jersey.
Yep.
Yes, 91.
Team USA.
Yep.
My Ranger jersey. Someone's tainted that this year.
Very cool.
And you know, see that picture right there?
Yep.
That original picture is in a Bruins uniform. That exact picture is actually me in the box in Boston, but they painted me with a Canadians jersey. It's fucking crazy. The kid who did it. And that was, that's actually a print. Somebody, they auctioned it off at my golf tournament for the Liam Foundation. And then quickly, there's Orr and the cop.
Nice.
There's my dad's plate.
I love it.
Pretty cool stuff. And then that's me breaking Tiger's nose. That's me fucking pounding Curran once again. So yeah, pretty cool shit. All this stuff was in my parents' basement. In my attic. That rookie jersey, when I was up there going through all this stuff, I went into a bag, a hefty alligator trash bag. I'm digging through it. That fucking jersey was at the bottom of it.
Unbelievable.
I never knew it was there. I never knew where it was. I was like, fucking crazy. I pulled it out. It was like a kid at Christmas. I mean, I can't believe it. It was really cool. You know, stitched up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you notice the only fucking shirt that I don't have?
Yes.
Bruins.
Those fucking cheap bastards. I'm serious. Fuck. I never got a fucking shirt from there.
So if you're watching, you got to send Knuckles Nyland his Bruins jersey.
That'll be the fucking day. I get better chance of winning the fucking Mass State lottery. All right, guys. I gotta run.
Thanks a lot,
Chris. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Anytime.
Thanks,
all right.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Get ready for some pain because it's coming with the Bruins. It's already here.
Yes.
Tell them, Tom.
Right?
Yep.
Fuck, it's tough. It's gonna be tough. They went through it here. It's fucking miserable.
Yep.
Yeah, like fucking losing, losing, losing. And people ask me all the time, hey, what the fuck you expect? At some point, you got to fill
rebuild
the cup up again. You know, they had a good fucking run. Playoffs every year.
Absolutely.
Now it's time fucking for the root canal.
Yep.
Blame Don Sweeney.
Yeah. Oh,
thanks
yeah.
A lot, Chris.
Fucking Sweeney. All right, boys.
Thanks,
Chris.
We'll
I agree.
Talk.
Thanks,
all right.
Man. It was
Thank
great.
You.
Thank you.
All right.